Hang in there. It is.
Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to another off-season episode of The Smiley Show. As you can see, if you're watching on YouTube or Sports Grid, I'm on the road. I'm with the in-laws here in Lehigh Valley in Pennsylvania. Got a nice little getaway for the first time in a long time. Smiley has been on the road, but is back at home now. And I guess the place where we have to start the show, Smiley, given our respective travels, is how far into the dad back incident are you willing to delve with our audience? Are you hurt or are you injured, Smiley?
If you can... You might be able to hear a little bit of a hum, and that's from my Hyper Ice Venom product that I love to use.
This doodad here.
It's fantastic, by the way. It gives you the pulsating vibration deal as well as heat. So you kind of throw it on as you warm it up in the mornings. This has been a game changer for me because, yes, it is true. Dad back definitely came out and about at the worst time. You know, we had just gone down to the beach, excited about just unbelievable weather that was in front of us, you know, just low 70s, not a cloud in the sky all week. And I had done some light stretching, and I'm somebody who's guilty of sleeping on their stomach from time to time. It's a guilty pleasure. And unfortunately, a lot of times it gives problems and issues to either my neck or my lower back. And this particular morning, I woke up a little bit stiff in the lower back, went and did some stretches, got ready, popped a couple Advil, ready to rock and roll to head on our walk. And so we're going down these like three stairs, and I just put Nana Carter on her jogger stroller deal. And it's not necessarily like the heaviest thing in the world, but it's not light by any means. And so instead of having Anna Carter get off of the stroller and walk down the stairs and then me go, you know, bring the stroller down either in front of me or behind me to where I can kind of control the weight. I'm not worried about Anna Carter flipping on her face. Instead, I decide, okay, we're going like wheelbarrow mode where she's, you know, in front of me. I'm in this stance where I got some flex knees. The arch back is a little bit arched as I try to get, you know, her down every single step. So one, two.
Any dad listening or watching, they know exactly what you're doing right now. So please continue.
To that second step, I am in as flex of a position as you possibly could be. And I just have these bottom muscles on my back, right above my tailbone, just give way. And it was like I was sniped, man, from the bushes. I go down, knees buckle in front of me. Fran's like, what happened? What happened? I said, my back. And she's like trying to like save the stroller from going down because I'm literally dead-handed as the stroller is literally going. Now it's going. It's like bouncing down the stairs as she like holds it while she has the carrier with our newborn child on her chest. Meanwhile, my back is out. And so I'm
imagining like a war movie where, you know, like where they get flash banged and it's like the buzz in their ear. And
you're seeing exactly right, because now I am looking at the ceiling and thinking to myself that this is not good. This is a bad situation. This isn't what I can just dust off, because I tried to get up initially and still was having spasm in my lower back. So I'm thinking, okay, this is not good. Fran's like, what do you want us to do? Like, we got to go take Rosie out to make sure she goes to the potty, get everybody out of the house for a second. I'm going to take them on a walk. Do you need anything? I can't go anywhere. I'm just going to be right here looking at the ceiling. I'll see you guys when you get back. So
you know where to find me.
I spend 15, 20 minutes. Honestly, like I'm okay because I'm not moving. I'm literally just looking up. And so when she gets back again, I try to get up and I'm like, I literally cannot get up. And so over the next 4 to 6 hours was a series of me crawling around the house, not just like crawling on my hands and knees. Like that eventually happened probably at hour 5 or 6. But for the most part, how I was getting around the house was on my back, and I was like using my fingers and my toes to like just barely move me forward and backwards like a slug. And so I would just kind of get from point A to point B. It would take me a long time, but I would get there. And so I had just drank a bunch of coffee. So naturally, I'm going to have to take a pee at some point. And so I finally get to my couch after going pee once, and I'm like, I have to go again. And so I literally roll off the couch and then do the whole deal back to the toilet. And I would just stare at the toilet because I could not get onto the toilet just to pee because I couldn't stand up at the time. So I'm sitting down to pee, humble brag. And it took me 20, 30 minutes. I'm not joking. That's how bad the situation was. Back spasms out of this world. If you've ever been through it, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, I hope you never have to experience it, because dad back was out and about. And it's hard to explain to Fran, you know, exactly what that feels like, this sort of pain. You know what I mean?
Well, so two things. One is on the bathroom topic. Jackson, I got a picture from you, like from the underside of the toilet, just shooting up into the bottom of the toilet. I can't get on this toilet right now. I can't move. This is my view right now, which I got a great kick out of. And I love that you brought up Fran here, because I was trying to explain this to Amanda, this whole dad back thing. She's like, I've heard dad back. What is dad back? And I was like, well, just kind of visualize or try to remember the pain you felt when you were in labor. That's kind of where we're at. And that joke didn't land the way I wanted it to, but thankfully we hopped on the phone a little bit later. You're able to walk her through it a little bit more. I think she's starting to understand now.
So similar situation, my common cold, labor, you know, these labor. Are all similar type things. Putter that hits the ankle. Labor. Connecting the dots here.
I love it. I'm just glad to see you sitting here in seemingly little to no pain, rocking the hyper ice.
It's getting better. I got needled the other day. So dry needling, physical therapy. Okay. And I've been very, very sore. But I'm thinking that a full week being at home, that I can go to physical therapy every day, maybe get some cupping, a little light massage, soft tissue work, that it'll start to get a little bit better. But I still feel like I'm at least a week before I could even think about swinging a golf club. That's how sore it still is.
Well, I'll use that opportunity to segue here to explain why I'm sitting here in the Lehigh Valley, because on the other end of the health spectrum here on the Smiley Show, I'm almost the recommended 6 weeks out from surgery that the doc said, hey, you can't play golf this long. And we've officially made our full return to playing golf this weekend. And it was just glorious. We
more
had,
pop in the bat or less pop in the bat?
I'd say maybe more pop in the bat, because I've been very diligent about my exercises, like everything. You know, I can't lift weights yet. So a lot of band work, a lot of mobility work, things of that nature. This is like a double wham this weekend, Smiley. I got asked a while back to go. It's a trip to this Dormy Network Club, Hidden Creek, on the Jersey Shore. Looked it up. Core Crenshaw. You know I'm an architecture nerd. I'm like, sign me up right now. Mm-hmm. And I looked at the itinerary, and it was like all these, like it was basically golf and like master chef classes. Like we had the food this weekend might have been just as good or better than the golf. We were making our own wood fired pizzas. We were eating like Piedmontese cheesesteaks.
I saw the pizzas. They looked fantastic.
Dude, everything was just, it was like great food and drink. And so this was an easy sell to a man. I was like, hey, do you want to take the kids and for the first time in 3+ years, drop them off with your parents to do a little weekend with Nana and like not have to be responsible for kids for 2 nights? And she looked at it and it's like, here's the only downside. You have to play 2 rounds of golf with me. And she said, you know what? Yes, let's do that. So went out there, first day, still kind of had the training wheels on, was playing decent on the front nine, kind of lost on the back, ended up shooting 84, but I was happy with it. I was just happy to be out there. Perfect, like high 50s, low 60s golf. Today, shot 75. Like we were all the way back, left a few shots out there, had a little bunker fiasco with some wet sand late in the round. But here is really what I need to report to you on today's round. I need to call your attention to this video here, because you might recognize this rain jacket here. This is Amanda on 16T, and
Ooh. Oh, man, it's dumping. Holy mackerel. Did it rain like this all day?
It, not all day entirely.
Did you make your wife play through that?
I'm going to, because we're talking about a guy who hasn't played golf in 5.5 weeks and finally has it going. Like, birdied 8, birdie 9, and it started to kind of drizzle a little bit. And it, so 9, it's like a par 5. Like a 3-shotter, hit like mini driver and 6-iron. I had like a little, like, kind of sawed off 9-iron in, and I flagged this thing to like 3 inches, right? And Amanda turns to me, we're walking up to the green. She's like, I guess this means we're not going to stop at the turn. I was like, there is no chance in hell we're stopping at the turn.
Was that an option? Could you have stopped?
We could have stopped. We could have stopped and gone inside. But I said, we're not stopping until I'm playing bad golf again. So we kept going. About 14, 15 started coming down. Started coming down a little bit. Heavy stuff's not coming down for a while.
14, so it's raining on 14, and y'all finish this round.
Oh, we finished this round. We played all 18 holes. We earned 18 cups. This was I needed this in a bad way.
Nope, man, put that out.
we need to see everything. Here's the last thing I'll leave you with on this trip is that they had these amazing steam showers at Hidden Creek. That was like the light at the end of the tunnel for Amanda. It's like, hey, we're going to have a wood-fired pizza and a nice super Tuscan glass of wine, and we're going to have a steam shower and all this rain.
If you guys were hopping into the car straight away after this round and you had to, you know, she's just wet puppy dog for the next 4 hours on a drive. I honestly would have had a problem with that. Because that's loving ball too much. I think that's crossing the line, but steam shower. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I'm back in.
I mean, I was a literal pig in mud at the end of this round. I was so happy. I was hitting the ball so good. Another one of the Smiley Kopman hand-me-downs, the Strixon ZX Mark 1 irons, whatever they are. Yeah. We were flushing with those. So,
oh, good.
A lot of SK fingerprints on the round this week. I was not going to stop. I'm glad I did. So we're officially back. And that's the report. Look at us. Here we are. Just hoping your back gets a little bit better.
I know. Well, I guess if you listened to our last episode, if you have or haven't, Michael Brennan, we had him on. That was a fun episode for a recent PGA Tour winner. But I would say over this past week, I'm glad we're kind of alternating a little bit, because in the fall, sometimes the news is a little slow. You kind of have to wait for the news to show up for things to talk about. And I think we have a good week to talk about some things.
We have a great week. We had, we got some DP World Tour kind of closing season results that are going to have an impact on the 10 guys that get their cards and come over this direction. We had a guy, Ben Griffin, win his third PGA Tour event this year, which matches Rory McIlroy and Scottie Scheffler. But of course, the headline, Smiley, this week was the news that LIV, which, by the way, LIV, Roman numeral, which stands for 54, is scrapping 54 hole events and moving their regular season tournaments to 72 holes of stroke play beginning next season. As of now, there are no other major format changes, still no cuts, still shotgun starts, still team and individual scoring. There's a lot to unpack here, Smiley, and we're going to kind of go piece by piece on this thing. But I just want to start with your reaction to that decision from LIV.
Oh gosh, I'm surprised, a little bit surprised, because I never really did feel like 72 holes was going to be a difference between them getting official world golf ranking points or not. There's plenty of tours like the International Series Asian Tour that play 54 holes that get official world golf ranking points. So there's plenty of tours in the world that have played 54 holes that get points. The problem is with, you know, the issue of getting players on and off the league. You got the same players playing every single week for pretty much like 3 years. Nobody really changed with any of the teams. So I know that's something that they're working on. Trevor Immelman, of course, is the new chairman of the OWGR. It seems to be working hand in hand with the LIV Golf League to try to help in them getting points. But to me, this is a step in, okay, we're going to go to 72 holes. This is going to be more like traditional golf. We want our players to feel ready by playing 72 holes so that when they do play in these events, that it transfers a little bit maybe better to major championships to see better play there. But still, there's just so much of the conversation about, and Charlie, you've seen it too, mm-hmm. how much the fans and how much the players have talked about 54 holes, how different it is, how new it is, and how they don't want to be like traditional golf. And here we are making a pretty big leap. I know it's just 18 holes, but to me, over a course of 14 events that they play, that's a lot more golf that these guys are playing. That at one point, one of the talking points was, well, we actually don't want to play as much golf. We want to spend more time with our families. And now you see that they have to play two extra Asian Tour events every year. So all this at the beginning, which I know things change. It's been 5 years now that these players now are having to figure out ways in which to get into major championships.
Yeah, and I think that there are a couple points you made there that are just worth kind of reinforcing with thoughts from guys like John Rahm, DJ Bryson, who echoed the sentiment of, yeah, this feels like it's better prepares us for major events. You know, there's no problem with that logic. It's more so the point you're making about this was your whole branding. Like this was your whole deal. And now you're departing from that for, you know, a number of different reasons, some of which are out of your control to a certain degree. But you know, many of those could have also been foreseen. To kind of tee up the discussion about getting into majors, OWGR points, which has been the sticking point for LIV this entire time, there were some quotes from Rory this week on the DP World Tour. He said, I think it's a peculiar move because I think they could have got ranking points with three rounds. I don't think three rounds versus four rounds is what was holding them back. He goes on to say, because their strength of fields are going to be so weak, I don't know if the ranking points are really going to benefit them. And I've got a list, and we want to get into it later in the show, of all these guys that have moved to LIV, where their OWGR ranking was when they left, where it is now. It's an interesting list. A few have actually, like four guys have actually improved on that ranking, but the majority of them dropped precipitously. Smiley, I think it's just, it's interesting that you have this decision to go to 72 holes when the sticking point does seem to be the fact that it's a closed shop, the fact that there's no cuts, you know, all these other things that are not, you know, they're just clearly stated by the OWGR. It's like, this is what you need to do if you want to be ranked. We're not saying you don't have great players. It's just that you're not creating pathways into playing in this league that make it sort of a legitimate competitive shop. So we can say, hey, fairly, this is how many ranking points we can give you. What are your thoughts on just, I mean, I'm not telling you to like put yourself in Scott O'Neill's position and say, hey, this is what I do if I was commissioner, but just, do you think this is the first of many changes, or you think this is like just a, hey, maybe they'll bite on this change. Let's go to 72. Let's see if this happens and works. And if not, we keep everything the same.
That's a good question. I mean, I saw that they had put in three trademarks for three different team names. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it's rebranding of a couple different teams, maybe adding another team in all of this. So again, like if you're still doing a shotgun format, I think if they were to go away from the shotgun and get into normal tee times, now you kind of expand the field a little bit. Maybe it adds for more relegation throughout their league, which I think would help in OWGR points. But I don't like the decision for them to do this. I think it was much better at 54 holes. There was a uniqueness part of it because, you know, John Rahm has won the league a couple different times now. And I guess in the 2 years that he's played, but he's only won, what is it, one time on the league, but mm-hmm. he's played so well. He's because it's 54 holes. I think it actually creates a little bit more of a unique winner week in and week out because there's a little bit less holes. It kind of can get a little fluky sometimes. I know they're all playing at the same time, but it's different when you're in a shotgun format and you're not sleeping on a lead. You don't see what's out in front of you, what you have to do. Sometimes that can be difficult to win when it feels like, you know, there's a lot of golf balls in the air, and that's kind of the unique part of it. And I think a lot of viewers that enjoy watching LIV, that's probably something that they like, which is the chaos. I don't like the decision because what is an extra 18 holes going to do? I don't mm-hmm. think it was ever going to change the perception from the golf viewers, or maybe the I don't see Trevor and the OWGR saying, oh, this extra 18 holes, that's going to do something different. I don't know. It just seems like all they're doing now is just creating. I know they've had this league, but it just seems like they're just trying to make a third league in all in a DP World Tour, PGA Tour climate, where I was kind of okay with them maybe slotting in weeks, which for a long time it felt like it was going to be that way, which was not competing against the PGA Tour on their big weeks. Mm-hmm. And it was like, all right, we can make this work. But now it's like just trying to be like the PGA Tour in a 72 hole deal, like the DP World Tour. I don't know. I'm not saying it's the best idea.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting too, even just the players themselves, you know, later in the week as more questioning, you know, arrived about this. Tyrrell Hatton, it talked about a live player questionnaire last year where only, I guess, around three players supported the move to 72 holes. But, you know, now I guess more of the guys have come around. You've heard the quotes that are on record of guys who were happy with the change. There was a little bit of a barbs traded between, you know, Lee Westwood this week and Rory McIlroy, and Lee sort of saying, you know, I don't pay too much attention to what Rory says. He'll change his mind next week. This sort of, you had a good idea before the show, not to get too off the tracks quite yet. I think there's a lot we still want to cover on LIV, but just the idea of maybe you can tee it up better than I can, but just making a list of things that you were either really in on or really out on, and then for some reason or another, you just had to backtrack. And it's like, oh yeah, no, that thing that I was like really hot on, like actually that's not it. Or that thing I was out on, like actually it is it.
I think so many golfers are guilty of this. I think one yes. of the easiest things to think about was, you know, talking smack about your buddy who is using a broomstick and has been using it for a long mm-hmm. time. And all of a sudden, you know, for a second there, it wasn't cool. And then or was cool. And now all of a sudden that you have the broomstick going, or, you know, the changing of the tune a little bit. So I think you and I both can relate in sports. Is that I think our college football coaches that we've had this past year, you know, I didn't like Brian Kelly before he got to LSU. I think he was tough to watch in Notre Dame. It just the way he acted on the sidelines. I'm like, how do you like this guy? Puts on an LSU hat and I'm like, that guy knows what he's doing. He Gold is Tigers. One of the coolest guys I've ever seen. But it didn't take long before I got over it. Yeah. But it's, I mean, it is how many times have you ever backtracked on something like this in your life?
Brother, let me just tell you the amount of internal shame, really external shame, I felt when I very recently had to take my North Carolina cutoff hoodie and pack it into storage. Just like, yeah, you got this one wrong, man. You got this one wrong. Although now I will say now that there are rumblings that you know that the program is back in the wake of a 5-point win, home win over Stanford. You know, we just might be
it's
back.
Good for you guys say, winning. I don't even know what that's like anymore.
So I might have to U-turn again. I might do lots of U-turns on this. I mean, sports is a great, you know, example of this, whether it's a coach or a player that you're in on. I think golf equipment really is a great one. And I'm guilty of this as a putter tinkerer of like, you know, I'll go to Hope Valley and some buddies are, you know, hey, what you got a new putter? Like, what's the deal on this one? Like, let me tell you, buddy, this one's not coming out of the bag. It's changed X, Y, Z things. The sight lines are so different. The weight's so different. This one's staying in forever. And then 3 weeks later, like, what happened to that putter? I don't really want to talk about it. I don't want to. Now we're using this one. And this one's better. You just got to trust me on that. And here's reasons, you know, X, Y, Z, why that's the case.
So much golf.
I mean, how many times, Smiley, have you had a driver where you're like, this is it. I'm hitting it straight forever. It's 10 yards longer. Like, it's never coming out of my bag. Like, you were convinced this was it.
I'll sell just myself, the people in my group. And then all it takes is playing with one really good player that all of a sudden they have this tight draw going with the driver in this club. And I'm like, golly.
I just hit that one.
You know what? I really do it with swing thoughts more than anything. I watch people's swings too much. I'm like, man, you see that little cast move he's got going on at the top? And like, literally, my swing thought heading into the day was like, all right, I'm going to get some flexion going on. I'm going to rotate, turn and burn. Next thing you know, I'm going like cuppy and throw. It's like, and how fast I'll change my tune.
This is actually perfect because this is true of my role on this show, which is like every time you have a new guest on that has like a new short game thought or swing thought, I'm just like camera off in the background with like a wedge in my hand. Like, sure. Oh, I could try weakening up my grip and kind of getting a little steeper. I could try that. And then someone else comes on, it's a new thing. So I do think in the realm of what we started talking about, the spin zone I've seen from Live Camp this week, which is a good one, like kudos to you, you guys are spinning it right, is that it actually 54 is, if you make birdie on every hole, he shoots 54. So it never had anything to do about the holes. It was all about the perfect scoring goal. Are you buying that?
Yeah, sure. I always thought with 54 holes that there's plenty of tour events that I said, dude, I wish they didn't have to play on Thursdays. Yeah. Thursdays are an absolute waste of time. Now, in the grand scheme of things, as a player, 72 holes is what I liked. Having a 36-hole cut, and especially after a 36-hole cut, you want 2 days on the weekend to be able to move up the leaderboard, because I played differently on Thursdays and Fridays than I did on Saturdays and Sundays, just from an overall aggressiveness, how I got more comfortable with the golf course. And there is something to that over a course of 72 holes versus 54, because I wasn't quite as aggressive on Thursday and Friday as I was on Saturday. I always seemed to play my best golf on Saturdays and Sundays because I knew how it was playing. I knew where I needed to attack. And typically scoring averages for the top guys, you know, depending on tournaments, obviously change, but it always felt like you had an opportunity to, if you played really well, you know, the leaders aren't going to play quite as good as they've played the first 54 holes. So an opportunity to really move up. So there's a game within the game of knowing a golf tournament, knowing what a good score is and what you want to get to whatever it's to win a golf tournament, top 10. So it's that game. And I think with 54 holes, there's been times I've played 54 hole events where it just has felt so shrunk to me, where it's like, God, if I just had one more round, I would have won this golf tournament by three. Or if I had, you know, one more round, I would have been able to work on this in my golf game. And I imagine that is the feeling for a lot of live players, where you play every 3 weeks or 4 weeks. And it's like, man, that's just not enough golf for me to like really know where my game's at.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting for a number of reasons. The one I care about the most, as we've noted before, is just this is a major exemption game they're playing. And I realize that a number of them have, you know, exemptions through past champion status from having won majors, you know, in the past, you know, 5 years or so. So this doesn't apply to everyone. But if you're looking at the current roster of LIV players and where they stand in, you know, there are two kind of big delineators, top 50 in the OWGR, top 60 in the OWGR for various majors. We can kind of go through again some of the LIV major criteria, because as we saw last year, both the USGA and the RNA created special criteria for players to gain entry into the US Open and the Open Championship via their standing and the LIV's points ranking. But right now, there are only three LIV players who are inside the top 60, top 50 in the world required to get them into some majors, so they aren't otherwise exempt. And those players are Patrick Reed at 44th, Bryson DeChambeau at 23rd, and Tyrrell Hatton at 21st. And you know, the list just goes further and further down. This is an interesting trivia question for you, Smiley. Can you guess the four current LIV players who have improved on the OWGR ranking that they took into the LIV Golf League?
Tom McKibben.
Correct.
He's up to 33.
No, 33. I think that's Data Golf. He's 80. I'm sorry. This is an October 27th list. So he was 85th in the world as of this time, pre LIV
136 or something.
He's improved. That's correct.
I would imagine that Carlos Ortiz has improved because of his US Open finish.
Incorrect. He's currently 151st. And by current, I'm saying October 27th. Pre-LIV was 119th.
Not a bad guess.
Not a bad one at all.
I can't remember the other players that you said. I mean, Caleb Surratt, did he have a record going in?
Caleb Surratt
is an OWGR guy.
He signed as an amateur on the list. So I should say this list, I'm probably playing a bad game here. This list is not exhaustive, but the other three are Bryson DeChambeau. Prior to LIV was 29th in the world. He's now 23rd. David Pooge was 1,835th in the world and is 161st.
That's Peter Uline, example.
311th, 176th. So that's really the only three guys. Then you have guys like, you know, it's you know, some of the drops. You know, Cam Smith came in second in the world and is now 310th. So, you know, just as it relates to some of these major exemptions, I just wonder if, is kind of to Rory's point, is if you finally, not 72 holes might not even get you the points, but if they did, you're still at a point where all the players who are currently ranked in that field are not going to give you a strength of field rating that's going to really move the needle to get guys moving up the rankings. You can only really do that by playing in majors at this point in time for many of the guys on LIV, right?
I think rightfully or wrongfully, these players in the LIV Golf League are going to be judged based off of how they play at the major championships. And it doesn't matter how many times a player has won on the LIV Golf League, like Joachim Niemann. He won, what was it, 5 times this year? And the amount of fans that said, don't care, do it at a major. And that's not right or wrong. I'm not here to agree or disagree. I think Joachim Niemann is a tremendous player. I think he's a world-class player. But how good is he? I want to see more consistent results at the major championships. And I think 72 holes, I think, will benefit a player like Joachim Niemann. I think it'll benefit John Rahm, Tyrrell Hatton, the better players of this league, where I think over time, you know, 14 events over the course of a season, not to say these guys weren't already at the top, but that extra round, throw Bryson in there, I think it helps them play into form a little bit. I think it reminds them of what a 72-hole championship feels like. I do think it's a little bit of a brand crisis when it comes to the league going from 54 to 72. Although I think it can help some players, I think it kind of hurts the brand of the league and what it kind of stood for, the innovation, the loudness, the different aspects of the game, the whole shotgun aspect, which makes it different. But is it better for these guys when they show up in majors? Which if you're tuning into golf 4 times a year and you look at the leaderboard and all you see is PGA Tour names and throw in maybe one LIV guy, the success of this league, if it's going to continue the way it is, you got to have a Brooks Koepka win a major championship like he did at Oak Hill. You got to have a Patrick Reed win a match. You need some more LIV players winning major championships. And that is the fuel to the fire that I think is what potentially will draw more people to watch the league, is if you have a year in which they have 2 major championship winners, or gosh, what about a world in which there were 3? You know, that is where you're like, okay, well, what's going on here? They must be playing some good golf, because sure, maybe some people won't still go and watch it because they disagree with the Saudi Arabia involvement. But maybe some will be like, hey, that guy just beat all the guys I watch week in and week out, and they play some good golf. So I think it kind of works against them in a way, but it also might work for some players. And I expect some players to get off to better starts at the Masters. I think over the last 2 Masters, when I went back and looked at it, Patrick Reed's been consistent. Bryson DeChambeau has been consistent. But outside of that, they haven't had a guy get off to a good start. I mean, Hatton, I think, has had a good event. I think he's only played 1 Master since, but they need players getting off to better starts. It kind of seems like the last couple of years, they play better in the majors as they go, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, it does, and it's interesting that you've kind of isolated that variable as, you know, it's maybe I'm thinking about this too analytically in the context of, you know, if it, the only goal here is to put things in front of the OWGR committee that are going to help them get ranking points. But you're kind of going with the more subjective, the more intangible approach of this should help them play better in majors. And that's another way to get more of our guys into these fields. Like, even if they're not
like, you know, your form. Points, yeah. Like, you get to work, because I think Rahm said last year at the Masters, like, hey, my stuff's just a little bit off. I haven't been able to play my way into shape. Where, like, you got guys playing an entire 4 to swing or whatever, get before the Masters.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, because there is, of course, another tour out there where some of the guys on LIV could be using to play their way into shape. And that is the subject of ongoing litigation, ongoing set of appeals. I think the two faces of that litigation, John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton, are both, of course, currently appealing DP World Tour sanctions. It's been reported over time that for each of the events that they played on Live Golf Tour without a release from the DP World Tour. They were subject to a one-event suspension and £100,000 of fines. This last summer, Live Golf, you said they were no longer paying those DP World Tour fines, but had reported have paid upwards of $20 million in fines, which is a pretty staggering number to think about. Of course, they can both play right now while appealing those things. Tyrrell Hatton has chosen to. John Rahm this season has not chosen to. And the drumbeat is growing louder in that specific forum of, hey, what happens if we reach this impasse and this appeal is not upheld in the favor of John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton, and these guys can no longer be DP World Tour members, and of course cannot play on the European Ryder Cup team at Adair Manor in 2027. So there are a lot of considerations going on here, Smiley, right now legally, and I just wonder. Maybe just you, big picture as we kind of shift to the DP World Tour, how you feel about that tour specifically, their position in the golf ecosystem, the fact they hand off their 10 best not otherwise qualified players every year to the PGA Tour, and what makes the most sense for them is it this strategic partnership they've had with the PGA Tour for a number of years that underpins the entire tour financially in a lot of ways, or would it be to leaning on a potential partnership with Liv, with Saudi regime and finance the tour that way and maybe pull a lot of international guys who would play a ladder schedule on Liv and be able to retain or continue to earn OWGR points by playing in now all of a sudden stronger DP World Tour fields featuring other Liv competitors.
I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot to get into. I definitely want to talk about it all, but I want to kind of get back to the thing you just mentioned at the top, which was Tyrrell Hatton and John Rahm and their appeals process that they're going through and how that potentially could affect the Ryder Cup at Adair Manor with those two guys not playing. You got to be a DP World Tour member. I think that's what a lot of people got to remember in this. Like, why can't they play? It's like, well, you have to be a member of the tour. So they had an option, right? Like to not pay these fines and just resign their DP World Tour membership. There's been other players that did this. I believe it was like Sergio, Lee Westwood, Ian Poulter. They all, I think it was a cat and mouse game for a little bit because Liv was paying the fines and they got to a point. They're like, nah, we're not going to pay him anymore. It's either you're paying the fines or, you can play, you can still play in these events, pay the fines, but we're not going to do it anymore. So I think you had some guys resign, which is obviously a huge, which I disagree with in a way because these are the same players who built the DP World Tour, like Sergio, Henrik Stenson, Lee Westwood. When I think of the European Tour, these are the players I'm thinking of, right? So I understand why that they would be so frustrated by all this, but they also know that there are rules in place that, from a competitive standpoint, that if you're a member of this tour, like you can't go join a rival tour. Like there's rules in place, just like in any other business.
Which I think is fair, but I think there is, if you're trying to be, fair about this entire thing and not kind of picking one lane or one bias, which we try to be, that there is a little bit of an artificiality as to why that's the case, right? It's like the reason why the DP World Tour is so heavy on these sort of suspensions and fines is because they're forced to by nature of their partnership with the PGA Tour. Because the tour is saying, hey, dude, we're not going to give you upwards of $100 million a season to underpin your tour and then watch you let your guys go play on this tour that's competing directly with us. I get why that's the case. And I get why there was this sort of juncture, this sort of crossroads that the DP World Tour where they found themselves and they kind of had to make a choice. Like, are we going to bet on this upstart league that has much deeper pockets than the PGA Tour, but could both fund this league and honestly, financially,
they were not in a good place.
They were not in a good place.
Yeah.
And really, I think what the decision boiled down to in a lot of ways was, do we want to be a partner with the PGA Tour or do we want to be a competitor to the PGA Tour? And there are probably a lot of Europeans, given the past history between two tours, that would have chosen competitor. And they may be looking at that decision, do we revisit it now? I'm not sure. I don't know what the right path is because I think the bet you're trying to make then is like, how long does the Live Tour stay around? And if it does not, does the entire DP World Tour fall apart? But I do think, as we've discussed on the show, it's like what Liv is trying to do or has been successful in doing is building more of an international tour. And you could see how that might be appealing to any number of top European players who are saying, I don't want to do the American travel grind. I like to play internationally a couple times a year. You know, do some live events where it's guaranteed money, no cut. Do some DP World Tour events, play on the Ryder Cup team, and call it a day. You know, I could see why that would be enticing.
Yeah, and you don't know how long Liv's going to be here. It could be here for another year. It could be here forever. You don't know. I mean, I read an interesting article. I think Josh Carpenter retweeted it. It was about Saudi Arabia's PIF and just their return on the investments of currently what they have, what they're looking to potentially cut back on. They didn't specifically mention Liv Golf, but they definitely the article kind of insinuated, hey, we're not going to just continue on a path of spending billions and billions of dollars on things that aren't bringing us money back, and just an overall restructuring of Saudi Arabia, their economical strategic plan of things that they're doing in Saudi Arabia that has no effect of what we're talking about right now with Liv Golf, but that is the backing of all this. Until Liv Golf starts to make more money through the teams, through television networks, because right now Liv Golf, they pay for the production for Fox. Like, Fox isn't spending a dime on all this stuff. This is Liv Golf's production. So they're continuing to spend a lot of money in all this. And so I think the world in which this could have all maybe worked is if the DP World Tour just had the investment maybe from the Saudis and all this, didn't go on to start their own rival league in Liv Golf. Would you have been okay with a very, very strong DP World Tour with really strong backing financially, let's say $20 million purses a week? Let's say you might have some European players decide to stay home and play the DP World Tour, not come to the States. Would that bother you as a golf fan to maybe see, you know, that's where really the WGCs were invented in the first place, for just the meshing of the two tours?
Yeah, it's so interesting because I try to think a little bit about like what would that landscape look like? Like, what would the realities be from a consumer standpoint, like a viewer standpoint, a fan standpoint, right? You know, a lot of the reasons why I like watching like English, like the Premier League, English soccer is like, I can wake up in the morning, you know, when my kids get me up nice and early, I can make a cup of coffee and there are matches on from, you know, 7 or 8 a.m. all the way until like noon. And then I get to get on my day and I have to stay up late and I get to bed early, right? You know, with golf, you kind of get that, but almost like a lot of the play's happening so early that really you're only catching maybe the back nine on most, you know, Sundays where an important tournament's coming down the stretch. I feel like you lose a little bit too much there. I also think I would be really, really interested to see how the PIF or the DP World Tour or, you know, Liv, whatever sort of conglomerate they came together that was making decisions for this league, this theoretical league, how they'd sell it as a television product. Because you have to recoup investment in some way, shape, or form, right? And the way that, you know, they're doing it obviously right now, the PGA Tour is like selling against television ratings in an American market. And those, of course, have been fractured and fissured in a lot of ways. And the whole point of the SSG coming in was like, how do we improve this theoretical product, right? Like, so that we can sell against a stronger product and make more money and funnel that back into the game. But I just think that even with lower television ratings for the PGA Tour, they would dwarf whatever you could sell Liv at in an American market if all the tournaments were happening at these odd hours and overnight and you're trying to sell like this morning, you know, TV window. It took years for NBC to build the Premier League into a viable TV product in the United States. And even now, the ratings aren't like any massive thing. It's just like it's kind of a nice sort of, you know, lower tier sports, so to speak, not in terms of the competition, but in terms of the television product. And so just from a business standpoint, like, how could you do that in a way that would justify PIF investment? You could certainly do it at a more financially viable rate, commercially viable rate than they're doing right now, where they're, to your point, paying for their own production to put that on Fox Sports. But there still is an element of like, how long can that last until it's, you know, really a true competitor with the PGA Tour from a commercial standpoint.
I think
that would be a huge fissure for the PGA Tour. Could you imagine how those TV ratings would drop if you basically lost every notable European player to this competitor league?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've always said that I wanted to watch Premier League in the morning. Never quite get there. but I do enjoy it. Like every time that it happens to be on, I never look away. I enjoy watching soccer. It's just never,
no ad
I'm
breaks.
Not programmed to watch it on Saturdays. We'll Saturday mornings?
It's Saturday, Sunday. Now they have some on Friday afternoons.
Yeah.
Monday afternoons. We'll do a Premier League pod later. not
there was a random guy who popped up on my Twitter, and I was like, I know that name. It was like Chubby. It was like that agent, Chubby Chandler.
Chubby Chandler. Yep.
Popped up on my Twitter. I was like, what has this guy been? You know, like that guy used to represent all the European tour players, and he had a take about the LIV Golf Tour on how. Well, first off, I think he isn't a fan of it. Kind of disagrees with what they did. He's like, what they're missing is that. Instead of it being four players that are just randomly put together, which some of the teams I think are great. Like when you think of the Majestics, I actually think about an English team. But I think they are missing the star power of a famous player, like let's say Colin Montgomery, or just name, you know, a Padraig Harrington, somebody that is a legend that has been incredible in the game, Tiger Woods, whoever you want to throw in there, and then throw in a couple, you know, really good players, PGA Tour players, DP World Tour players, whatever, and then a ladies player, and have it be a team that is consisted of, you know, an older player that's obviously accomplished a ton in the game, maybe an up and coming player, a really established player, and then a women's player. And I was then thinking about that, and then I started thinking, man, if they would have just leaned into nations in this, people really care about nations. Like if it was a Team USA, instead of like these like random clubs like Fireballs and Majestics, like if it was an English team, if it was a Spain team, those are things that people like when they turn on the TV and they see countries. Okay, I recognize that. I can relate to that. Oh, I know who that guy was. I loved watching him. You know, you got your dad or your granddad telling you about, oh, yeah, I remember used to watching this guy. He was unbelievable. It's like, well, is he as good as this guy? I don't know. Well, let's see. I think that type of product could be really interesting because that's not something that should get world ranking points. This is just a cool golf product that could help grow the game. And if that could have been somehow with good backing, obviously you would need good financial backing for these players who want to do it, something that was traveled globally, where maybe that these players are playing every week, but let's say you had 6 to 8 of these across the world that these players are going to play in, that isn't conflicting with the main tour schedule with the majors, and not to say that these guys are going to want to go do this, but I'm just giving you another option of how you could have a Saudi Arabia backing with the climate and what golf is now. I think that would be interesting because it's different than 72 holes. Like this is something that maybe people could wrap their arms around because maybe it's a different format. Maybe it's not 72 holes. Maybe it's 9 hole matches, something that's quick and poppy. That's where my head kind of goes.
I think there's a lot in there that I agree with completely. I mean, I think that the whole idea of the creating these home games, that's the thing that we've found the greatest connection to as we've watched LIV Golf, you know, that watching Ripper play down in Australia in front of like a home crowd and they're in contention coming down the stretch and they win that first team championship at that first Australian event and the fans just going nuts. Like, in a league where it's been hard to find true wins, like let's look at the things that have been true wins and how do we build more of those? So home games, I think, would be huge. I think you just look at the success of a Ryder Cup and say, you know, we've kind of poked fun in the past at LIV of, you know, Taylor Gooch talking about it, you know, this has to be what a Ryder Cup feels like. I'm like, not exactly,
tough.
Buddy.
That was tough.
But there is a way to kind of build many Ryder Cup feels if it's like, hey, this is, you know, this week you're coming to Australia and this is the Ripper home game. And next week we're going to South Africa and that's Stinger's home game. Or whatever you want to do in terms of the sort of the team branding, like that definitely plays and that definitely sells. And it's, you know, again, you come back to the whole TV thing of how do we broadcast this in a compelling way? But I you could get behind that. I also think, too, part of the issue with LIV is being trying to do too many things, right? Like trying to kind of be this this competitor golf tour to the PGA Tour and have, you know, initially 54 hole, but like, you know, now 72 hole individual tournaments while also doing the team golf thing. And it just, it's not working on all those levels. If you really were able to say, what's the best version of home game team golf and make that this its own sort of fun event, maybe it doesn't have the same cachet right out of the gate, but it's certainly not as competitive to a PGA Tour or a DP World Tour. And maybe there is more room in the ecosystem for that. And I think the final point you make that's an interesting one is like playing off that Chubby Chandler tweet of like sort of mixed gender teams is that look around right now, like what is really working in golf entertainment. You know, the Internet Invitational, people are really loving that. Now, I think that it is very hard. People love to just point at YouTube golf and say, you know, why aren't we broadcasting golf like this? It's like, well, for a number of really important and rational reasons, right? Like if you really want to see a YouTube golf broadcast, like of the PGA Tour, like, are you just going to pick one golfer? Are we just going to do 18 holes with Jordan Spieth and just only hear his viewpoint? Because now you're not showing any other shots, right? But I think that there is an interesting part of that playbook that you can pull from things that are working and are successful and say, you know, as we get compelling personalities in here and we think about a format that people are enjoying and we think about a way to kind of do it that targets a bunch of different audiences, you know, that is something that sponsors are willing to back. I mean, we just saw that the Aramco deal is going to come to LPGA Shadow Creek. Like there's a lot of room for that in the game if you can think creatively about how to do it without, you know, trying to force too many different ideas together.
Who's to say that this whole idea of a nation's deal, let's say this is a LIB thing with, you know, all these different mixed male competition, who's to say it has to be live? Who's to say that this can't be produced?
Great point.
You know, where you have all of the commentary from every single group and every single match where everybody gets to see every shot. And that's where you kind of fix this entire model where everything is judged based off of ratings. Well, let's say that you have a product that's produced with all of these top end talents that all of a sudden it's not for official world golf ranking points, but it's for cash, it's for pride, playing for your country, all of these sorts of things that makes a great television product. But if it's in Australia, we've realized that that's been the biggest issue going globally is that it doesn't register from a rating standpoint. So that is where you can maybe learn a lesson from YouTube golf is that they've produced products that withstand, you know, for a long time that you can go and watch forever that they did a great job of. I still don't know who's still left and who's still going and who's won the thing because they've kept it a secret. And I think that's maybe something that you can look at as a potential option. But I do think fans being out there is important. So that's, I don't know how you're able to discreetly say who won or lost, but I don't know.
Well, and fans is the, you know, is the more positive of I think the two issues with not doing live. Second one is who wants to go tell the sports books that you can't get, you know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, that really and truly today's day and age.
Who's to say that these people have personality? These players we're talking about.
That's true. But I do think a lot of the adherence to live has to do with like in today's day and age, can you gamble on it? Because that is a big sourcing of funds and eyeballs and things like that. And you know, it's an existential question to be answered. Like, do we care more about a compelling product we can sell against? Do we care about whether or not people can engage via betting on it? I don't know. I'd be fine with tape delaying it in the sake of product. Many people probably wouldn't be. It's an ongoing discussion. It's an interesting one. It's one that I'm glad we can dig into this offseason. But I will be curious to see just the knock-on effect of does this amount to just nothing more than making these LIV guys, you know, to your point, more prepared to play better in majors so that they can retain entry to those majors in the future. And if that's a net win for them, then that's something. That's not
I would
nothing.
Say one of the other big knocks on the LIV Golf Tour is that they haven't created their own stars. I think they have an option or a potential young star in the making with Tom McKibben that they can claim as their own. You know, he was a good player on the DP World Tour. Don't get me wrong. He wasn't like it's some world beater like Rory McIlroy coming up. We were like, okay, this guy can be really good. He's, what is he, 23 years old? Made his way to the PGA Tour for maybe one start before signing on with John Rahm's team in Legion. And that's where you start to wonder, okay, is this a good avenue for young European players who have yet to take up PGA Tour status? Let's say if you go out and play well, Tom's made, I think it's like $5 million or something is what I've read to this point. That's a lot. That's a big chunk of change in just a year, from whether it be just a signing bonus and what he's made on the golf course. And now he's up in a decent spot in the world rankings. I'm not sure. Where did we say he was? He's top 50? I thought he was top 50. No?
As of the 29th, if I go down here, he was 85th in the world.
But 85th, okay. But Data Golf, he was like something.
I think Data, he's 33rd in the Data Golf rankings.
But winning the Hong Kong Open gets him into the Masters. Mm-hmm. So there's another pathway for a young player, a live player to get in. So I'm 72 holes could be good for the top guys, but also you have another young player. Like, I'm just thinking of like, how does this league get more traction than you know, Joaquin Neiman won 5 times and like everybody was pumped to watch him play at these majors, and you know, he hasn't quite broken through at these majors. And I'm just wondering what are going to be the things that take the league to the next level, that get regular golfers and fans watching and saying, man, these guys got it cooking over there.
To wrap the live discussion, but there are two kind of additional league items we teased at the top of the show that I'd love to get your quick thoughts on as the show comes to its conclusion. The first is with one event remaining on the DP World Tour, the championship that closes their season out. Here is your current list of rankings for players in the order of which they could receive their PGA Tour card next season. Marco Pinge, of course, tops that list. Christopher Reitan, I hope I'm saying his name right, the Norwegian player. There are a number of names in here that I'm looking at a little bit. I hope I get this right, and please correct me if I'm wrong in the comments. Adrian Sadir, third. John Perry, fourth. Alex Noren, fifth. Lori Cantor, sixth. Hao Tong Lee, seventh. Daniel Brown, eighth. Keita Nakajima, ninth. And Jordan Smith, 10th.
Lori Cantor the first guy to go from LIV to the PGA Tour now?
I remember he was the first to play at a tour event. I think the Players' Championship it was, where he made his way back to first to play an event. And then this would be another one. To earn his card, he would also be the first to do that as well.
And it's because he never has had PGA Tour status. Correct? This is how he's able to...
It's because he currently doesn't have status. Because all of these are, you know, you see names on this list of guys who've held PGA Tour cards before, but are at risk of losing it. In fact, I think Nikolai Højgaard is, I think, like 15th on this list right now, but is also 84th in the FedEx Cup standings. Whereas I believe Alex Noren, you see him on the list, you say, wait a second, didn't he already play on the PGA Tour? He is currently 122nd on the FedEx Cup. And so, you know, for a lot of these guys, we talked a little bit about this a couple of years ago with Minwoo Lee. Like, you're in the fall and you're kind of deciding which one makes the most sense. For Noren, obviously, he's pretty entrenched there. He's going to get his PGA Tour card via this pathway. And really, the difference is just like which reshuffle category he's in. Whereas, you know, for a guy like Nikolai Højgaard, we'll play in the final event of the season, but you know, via his 84th position in the FedEx Cup, will retain his PGA card through that top 100 stats.
Yeah, and that's the frustration and the argument that DP World Tour fans make. It's like, we're giving you our 10 best players every year, you know, that aren't already exempt for the PGA Tour. You could understand from a, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, does it? You know, like, that's a lot of players you're giving away every single year. And then you're talking about, you're not going to let John Rahm and Hatton play. It's like, what gives? You know, as a fan of the European Tour, I would be frustrated about it too.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, if you're really trying to be transparent about it, or like not hold any bias against it, it's like, I don't love that at all for the DP World Tour, because you're basically being held hostage by some of money that's keeping your tour afloat. But you can kind of look around and say like, well, if this is the number we need, we could probably get that and get a lot better players to come play on this tour via partnership with that. You know, there are a lot of ways where it feels like you can make it a more competitive tour and still get the money you need, instead of just saying, well, the reason why we're handing off our best players and we're barring these guys from playing on LIV is because we need the $100 million chunk of change to keep this thing afloat with the PGA Tour. So we kind of have to do what they tell us. And that stinks for that tour. That really stinks for that tour.
God, it sure does. And I'm all in on the DP World Tour in the fall. I think it's awesome.
It's fantastic.
I love it. I couldn't be more out on the PGA Tour in the fall. I'm like so so over it. I know Ben Griffin won this week, which by the way,
perfect segue.
Shout out to my boy Benny Bombs for getting another dub.
Only just got tour of the season. It's won three events alongside Scotty Scheffler and Rory McIlroy. How about that?
Had no reason to go play. Just said, might as well go. Was in Cabo. Is that where they were this week?
Yeah. It was
Let's go to Cabo this week on a little vacay. And let's go win another golf tournament.
Ben Griffin in the world rankings. How about
that? It's awesome. I still think that he should have played a lot more at the Ryder Cup. Don't get me started on that one. He didn't play great that first afternoon, but he should have been playing in the morning to start. So, I don't know if any, I don't want to get on the Ryder Cup, but still, good stuff to Benny. I have not even looked at the leaderboard besides seeing that Ben won. I know it's a very open golf course. Nick Dunlap got off to a great start. Mm-hmm. Shot 61 that first day. It was good to see him play some good golf. I could hit some fairways at this place, big old fairways.
I think I saw a stat, and the only reason why I feel good sharing this is because I saw Nick Dunlap commented on the Instagram post. I think it was a Golf Digest Instagram post where it was a great stat. It was like either the widest score margin between two PGA Tour counting rounds in a single season, or like no one had ever done this.
Yeah, 61 and 90.
61 and 90 at the Masters. And he's like, I don't know if that's a good record to have or a bad record to have.
Holy moly, dude. Yeah. 29 under. Holy mackerel. This golf course.
9 under on a Sunday to just...
They're shooting the lights out of this place. Did anybody shoot over par today? That's my next question.
That's a great question.
Two people did. Two people shot over par today out of 75. Holy moly.
And that's been covering fall golf on the PGA Tour.
There you go. So. Yeah. Seriously, that's it for me.
Yeah, that's it and that's all. Yeah, it is that time of the year where we're gearing up. We got Hero World Challenge, of course, is a cool event to kind of see some of those stars. Almost, I think of that more as like a table setter for the 2026 season than I do as an extension of the 2025 season. But we're getting to about that time. We're ready to kind of...
So that is one event that you could say you're like, wait, there's 18 players playing and they get official world golf ranking points. That is an argument that any LIV fan can make or any LIV player can make and be like, dude, you only got 18 guys playing. You're getting points. What's going on?
Yeah, listen, and we'll put a pin in that one. We'll come back to it another time on the Smiley Show, because that's all the golf talk we have for you tonight. And we're just hoping Smiley, the hyper ice does some magic on your back.
It's a little stiff right now.
Yeah, a little stiff.
I need to go do some cat cows.
I will say I don't know if it's because like I had the surgical incision on the front left side, but I like leaned over in the locker room today to tie my shoe and something just jolted up my back, and I threw down a few Motrin and we got through the round. But when I got in the car for that 2.5 hour drive home, I need to keep that seat heater on high because it is stiff right now.
Yeah.
So
get the venom.
Dad back. You know, basically a couple guys going into labor right here. Thanks so much for everyone watching and listening. That's a cool little flag logo you have on there too.
It's the Alabama State flag. USA flag. I did like an event for them and they had these flags already on my thing. I was like, all right, cool.
Bang. Yeah. I don't know if we have anything to tease right now, Smiley, but you know, when we do. Do we? I don't think we do. We just made a face like we might, so I didn't want to leave it.
I got nothing.
We got nothing.
My fantasy team sucks. That's all I got.
Oh, there we go. That's a great way to sign off. Hope yours is playing better. Thanks so much for watching and listening. We'll talk to you right back here very soon.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our first lovely time. Fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too. So please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes, so I'm happy to come on and shoot the